Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life. It's the 12th of February 2026. It's 9:30, according to my phone, which is 5 minutes fast, I think. Yes. So it's 25 minutes past, but that doesn't really affect anything. I've just set up here in the studio. Well, it's not a studio. My downstairs front room has become a studio. The light's ready to do my video. But I realised I hadn't done a Naked Englishman yet. I've just had to see the lovely Julia off. She's off to her mum and dad's for a day and taking the kids and out for a nice little trip, which is rather jolly. I've got stuff to do here. Now, yesterday, all my troubles. Actually, it was a good day yesterday. We went down to see a chap who has access to some scaffold boards. Why am I going upstairs? Oh, he's looking for a jacket to wear in the vid. Oh, I could wear that jacket, actually. Could I? Does that one go over my jumper? Should I use that one? I will use a different jacket, I think. So, yes, I went to see a chap. We picked up some lovely scaffold boards, which have been cut to size for what we want for making a veranda. Yes, a veranda, ladies and gentlemen. For the tool shed that we have. I say tool shed, I mean workshop. That's the word I'm looking for. A workshop. Let's take this old jumper off. My sort of house jumper, which is a fluffy old thing. Bear with me as I just go over to the other side of the world, here in the place where I have my jacket hanging. I think that one will be good. Let's just get it off the rail. I shall put it back on the rail when I have finished. Also, I ought to choose a nice cravat. I think this one would do quite nicely. It's a sort of lilac one today. Anyway, so we went there, and he's a chap who's looking for land, but he's looking, I think, down in Cornwall, which is a long old way away from where he lives, and he's got a site in mind, which is grand. So we had a good old chat about, you know, new farmers, new growers, what do you call, off-grid, no, not so much off-grid, well, you are off-grid, I suppose. But what am I looking at? People who did homestead type things, you know, or is it homestead? Anyway, it doesn't really matter. New people growing things, growing food. Whatever the term is, I can't really think at the moment, doesn't really matter. You know what I mean, that is the main thing. You're not thick. At least I hope you're not thick. Anyway, we had a lovely chat about that, went to a little cafe. I bought us some toast, cheese and ham toasties. He was giving me the wood for free, so I felt it was only fair to reward him with all of this. He got it for free himself, you see. But he had access to it, which is rather nice. Right, just got to get into the jacket, which is a very nice. I do like this jacket. It's a very sporty little jacket. Now, let's see if I can get that over my shoulder. So we had a chat about that. Then, having done that, we drove up to the land. So quite a bit of driving yesterday, and it was raining. And so we took the scaffold planks, and then we had to go and get a couple of wheelbarrows, which we've got up there, and wheelbarrow them up to the tool, not the tool shed, the workshop. Actually got a different, we've got a different place for the tools, length tools like scythes, spades, hose, those sort of things, you know, with long handles. I've got somewhere else in mind for that. But anyway, the workshop where work will be done in the shop. Although none of it will be sold, of course, if that makes sense. And then, yes, in the pouring rain, with our wet weather gear on, we went and ascertained. We didn't ascertain anything. We wheelbarrowed the stuff up to the top. So that was all good. And then locked it all up, and then we came home. We had some fish and chips from a nearby village, which had a fish and chip shop, which we saw, and it was open. So we went in there and said, well, we didn't have fish. I said fish and chips, didn't I? My brain is not working 100%, as you can tell, for we didn't have fish. I don't eat fish. We had chips, bag of chips. And actually, we sat in the van and allowed the, what was the traffic, the, you know, the traffic at the end of the day, what do you call it, the rush hour traffic, we allowed that to pass. So we got back home pretty late. There was a lot of driving. But all in all, when I calculated what we'd spent in terms of diesel, the toasted sandwiches and the chips and cups of tea and stuff, for the price of the free wood, I thought it was still a good deal. It was a bargain, in other words. So that was rather nice. The other thing I was going to talk about today is I'm still a bit reading, ploughing through gently the R.F. Delderfield books. Let's just have a sit down in my little armchair here. And I wanted to read you a little bit because I do like R.F. Delderfield's Ronald, I think his name was, or Ronnie as he was called. I do like his style of writing very much. And every now and again, he introduces some almost cartoon-like characters into the books, which would have existed. So they're not completely round the twist, although, of course, fiction is often slightly exaggerated to real life, although a lot of real life is more unbelievable than fiction. We all know that if you wrote certain things in real life into a story, no one would believe it. No one would have believed at the beginning of the 18th century that minds immeasurably more superior were regarding this earth with envious eyes. Who wrote that? H.G. Wells. Thanks. So I thought I'd just read a little bit here from R.F. Delderfield's The Dreaming Suburb, Book 1, his magnificent saga of England and the English. And I do, I mean, I read this because it's of a period I'm particularly fascinated in. And it is you know, that people write these high adventure stories, don't they, where they're tackling big evil McNasties and all this sort of nonsense. I don't really read many of those. I used to read Hammond Innes. Was it Hammond Innes? Alistair MacLean. Dennis Wheatley. I used to read all those sort of books when I was a kid, big adventure stories, and always wanted to write, I suppose, similar things, you know. There were many of those sort of books. Dick Francis, my mum used to write, love reading, and he always wrote about horses, didn't he? Horse racing thing. I never really got into that. Yes, when my mum died, I inherited a number of her books, I have been trying to read some of them. Some of them weren't so good, but she had some J.B. Priestley, which was good, the Good Companions, and the Something Empire, which is just over here. Bear with me, I'm going to get it. Oh, it's a daisy! Which was turned, I think it was turned into a film. Where is it? Oh, I thought that was it. Oh, The Lost Empires. Have you ever read that? By J.B. Priestley. And he talks, and you think, Lost Empires, what's that talking about? Is that, you know, talking about the Roman Empire, the Mesopotamian Empire, all of those sort of things? No. He's talking about empire theatres, you know, like the Bournemouth Empire, if there was ever such a thing, or the Blackpool Empire, probably lesser towns, lesser smaller towns, the Thetford Empire theatres and things like that. And it was such a good book. I enjoyed that. Anyway, what else did I get from London Belongs to Me, which is a very favourite book of mine. I like London Belongs to Me because it's sort of within the story, there's so much sort of incidental, ordinary, everyday detail about bus tickets and cups of tea and types of china and, you know, sort of stuff that we don't talk about anymore. that people used to do, having high tea at 4 o'clock and that sort of thing. I love all that. And we kind of lost it all. Did we ever have it? One wonders. Anyway, I'm going to read this little bit here from page 297 on The Dreaming Suburb. And you don't need to know the main character, any of these characters, really, because this is a new character that comes in. I just thought it was quite fun. So Elaine Thrith is one of the characters, and this other chap who comes in. Elaine Thrith stayed on as receptionist at the Falconer for nearly 2 years after she had left the flat over the antique shop at Llandudno in order to make way for Pippa. She was a good receptionist, popular with guests and management, and she might have stayed at the hotel much longer than 2 years had it not been for the arrival, in the spring of 1934, of the great Eugenie. Illusionist and spellbinder who stayed at the best hotels, whether he could afford it or not. The great Eugenie swept into the foyer of the Falconer with a swish of his crimson-lined cloak and an imperious, turn the page, tapping of his gold-headed cane upon Elaine's glass-topped reception desk. He tapped because Elaine, at that moment, was working the telephone switchboard and had kept him waiting a moment or two. When she looked up and saw him, she abandoned the switchboard and turned upon him with that demure, yet oddly provocative look that had once caused the middle-aged males of the Avenue to glance over their shoulders at her slowly receding figure as she passed to and from number 17. The great Eugenie was not specially... the great Eugenie, because it sounds much better as a theatrical thing. But anyway, the great Eugene was not specially privileged in this respect. Every unaccompanied male who showed up at Elaine's reception desk was the target for a few fleeting seconds of this curious, disturbing look, a glance that hovered somewhere between extreme feminine modesty, sweet feminine submissiveness, and the merest hint of something a little more up to date. The great Eugene, a specialist in illusion of every kind, was not fooled by it for an instant, but he, nonetheless, stopped tapping, stood back, and bowed from the waist, recognising at once that Elaine was not the kind of receptionist one tapped for. Then he reciprocated her look by turning upon her his full battery of charm, a charm that had coaxed shy young ladies out of their seats and into his stage sentry box all the way from Fort William to Sheerness, simply in order that they might disappear and reappear at the staccato clap of his hands. This clap usually preferenced heartier clapping from the auditorium, for the great Eugene, at his best, had been a very popular turn, and his guillotine trick had been said to conjure screams of horror from strong men, and once on the Northern Circuit caused a retired Major General to faint into the arms of a programme seller. Anyway, I think I will leave it there, but I just love that sort of sense, that back old-fashioned sense of these travelling acts that would turn up at hotels with their theatricalities, making life just that little bit more entertaining and interesting than the drab life that ordinary life back in the 1930s would have had, where people lived in tenements and flats with very little furniture, very little pleasures, and scraping a living. And then compare that to today, which in many ways hasn't changed, except that people have Netflix accounts and Amazon Prime, and they have Deliveroo, and they have people knocking on the door, you know, with things that have come that they have ordered through their smartphones. And I wonder, you know, we always think, oh, but we're in such a terrible state. But are we?
Are we really, or are we tricked into spending all this money on these trinkets and these, what do you call it, material things that have turned up? I don't know. I don't know. Were we better off then with these drab sort of ways? And yet people dressed much more smartly. They had, it seems to me, better morals and ethics on the whole, although behind closed doors it seems that everything, you know, human nature is what human nature is. And people would have sinned in the same way as they sin today, if actually you call it a sin. I think people just are what people are, and they sort of disappear into a mould that has been there for generations. I don't think really much changes with human nature. I think it's the same. It's just the dress, the fashion. The circumstances have changed, but people are what people are. And I think people are what people are, will it always be. They take what they can when they see it and, you know, take advantage of these things. Some of them honourable and kind and wouldn't think of cheating another, and others merciless and mean and taking advantage of everyone wherever they can. I don't think that will change, personally. But anyway, there we are. That is today's little ditty, and I hope you find it interesting. I'm going to now record my video, which will be out a little later on today. And I don't know what the title of it is. I barely know what the subject is, but I shall make an effort to create something as a form of entertainment, as a comment on what life is really all about. Anyway, take care, my friends. Enjoy yourselves. And from now, until the next time we speak, ta-ta.